Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Today on Truth and Movies, a very special interview with filmmakers Josh and Benny Safdie. Stay tuned for an uncut, gem-filled conversation, a good time talking about heaven knows what. All coming up in Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hello there, movie truthers. We've been let out of the studio for a day to come and interview the Safdie brothers. Hannah Woodhead's here with me.
Hello, Michael.
So we should probably set up who the Safdie bros are.
If you don't know, then get off this podcast.
I dropped a few of the names of their films in the intro.
You did, just a few.
So, Good Time, Robert Pattinson.
Why are we not going in order, Michael?
Oh, sorry, I didn't know we were being purist about this. Do you want to go in order?
Should we go in order? So, disputed debut, The Pleasure of Being Robbed, Daddy Long Legs, Heaven Knows What, Good Time, Uncut Gems. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Uncut Gems, which is now on Netflix.
So The Pleasure of Being Robbed was a just over an hour long film they made. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, funded by Kate Spade and Jack Spade, the fashion designers. Right. But I still go back and forth on whether or not that counts as their debut. For mm-hmm. me, I think that Daddy Long's is probably their first. It's the first Safdies as we know them film. But yeah, I think for my money, they're kind of one of the most exciting filmmaking duos working. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone that's familiar with this podcast or Little White Lies in general has probably seen me like going off about how much I love the Safdie brothers.
And so. Uncut Gems. We've spoken a lot about Adam Sandler in that movie.
We have, yeah. I mean, I'm a Sandler stan, a Standler, as we call ourselves. And I'm sure by the time people hear this, there's going to be a lot of kind of like, oh my God, Adam Sandler's back. Maybe he never left. Like, Uncut Gems is kind of the natural progression of all his comedic and dramatic roles so far, I think. It corrals all his kind of like manic, larger-than-life characters into this world that the Safdies are very familiar with, which is this hyper-stylized, frenetic New York. And I really think it's not like anything else that people mm-hmm. will have seen in the past 12 months, maybe longer.
And it's the same for them, isn't it? So their previous two films, Heaven Knows mm. What and Good Time, saw their profile building on the yeah. festival scale, on the world scale. Good Time in particular with Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Good Time was in the director's fortnight at Cannes, I want to say.
I think it was in competition.
Was it in competition? You know? Yeah. Whichever. I wasn't there. That was before my time. I was but a young film critic. So this is kind of them levelling up. I mean, they've said it's when they did Good Time, mm-hmm. that was the film that enabled them to get Sandler for this one. They've been trying to make Uncut Gems for 10 years now. Oh, wow. And Sandler has always politely declined speaking to them. And then he saw Good Time at Cannes because it was the same year as the Meyerowitz stories. And yes. They were able to get a meeting with him. And it's the same with Darius Kondji. Yes, who came to them after seeing Good Time and said, if you want to take your movie making to the next level, mm-hmm. then give me a call sometime.
Right, that's amazing. Because I do remember that year at Cannes. I actually reviewed both Meyerowitz stories and Good Time for Sight and Sound that year. And who knew that they would cross over in this
way? I know. If Sandler hadn't been there that year, you know, maybe he wouldn't have seen Good Time. Maybe we wouldn't have ended up with Uncut Gems.
Who would have been in Uncut Gems? We should say that Uncut Gems, in a similar way to Good Time, is this almost anxiety-inducing sort of yes. dramatic thriller where lead character or protagonist gets in over their head and just yeah. makes every wrong decision they could.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen any of the Safdie brothers films so far, that is kind of their thing, is protagonists making poor life choices, and it's painting themselves into a corner and trying desperately to get out of that corner. Mm-hmm. So we had that in Good Time, we had that in Heaven Knows What, we had it in Daddy Long Legs, but I think this feels like the most polished version of that. Mm. So I would say definitely if you're not a Sandler fan, as I am, it's worth checking out for more than that. I think it's not just a great Adam Sandler film. I think it's just a great, if you're interested in kind of crime films, thriller films, great New York films, or basketball movies, if that's a subgenre people are into in the UK, I don't know. I would definitely say it's a must-see.
And that's sort of where we start with this interview. We start with the research that goes into a film like this.
Yes.
Where Josh and Benny spent years looking into the Diamond District and the outsized characters who work within it. But then also, we talk about sports and how they wanted this to have a very specific basketball context when they're looking at the games, the players they want to have in there. So we go in the deep end pretty quickly in this chat.
Yeah, they walk in the door and it's all systems go. I've never experienced an interview quite like this, I think.
It really is amazing because if you follow them on Twitter, you know that they're very active.
Yeah, they share an account.
They do share an account. But they, when you talk to them face to face, it's almost like you're in one of their films.
Yeah.
The anecdotes are huge and they go on forever. The energy is so high immediately and it's so engaging and compelling. And hopefully that's captured a little bit in our chat. And now let's go to our interview recorded, as we said, remotely. So a little different sound quality wise to what we may be used to. Josh speaks first. All of that does lead into what we wanted to start with. The first question was how this film has been gestated over such a long period.
Yeah.
And how we wanted to see how had the story changed during that research period.
God, you know, there's over 160 drafts of this script. And it was changing until we were locked, basically. You know, we edited the film. We added one or two scenes as a pickup. And, you know, after Daddy Long Legs... Daddy Long Legs, after we wrote a script together when, like, you know, I was 21 or something. It was a first feature script, and it was a script. And it never got made, and that kind of left a weird taste. And then we got afraid of the script process. So we started to, like, Heaven Knows What and Daddy Long Legs were both written in prose form. And, you know, just it's funny to read. I was rereading it recently, rereading them, and they really still... It's exactly the movie you see, but it's just written out like a book almost, or like a story. So this movie was the film that we wanted to follow up Daddy Long Legs with, but we knew that it was a big world, it was an expensive world, it was a materialist world, and that we needed to net a certain budget, and we weren't going to do that, and we needed to get a movie star and all that, and because the character had to be a star, because he is a star in his own life in the Diamond District. So we had to write a script again. And, you know, the first version of the script was kind of like a nostalgic...
The script would go with different characters.
It was episodic, yeah. It was more episodic, you know, and it was really... There was research involved in it, but it was more tied to a feeling that we had, that we wanted to tap into these stories that our dad would tell us that we, you know, from his time in the Diamond District when we were kids. And, you know, and so that first draft... was just getting it down in a final draft document. And then over the years, the more research you do, the movies that you make as a detour, they all educate the next process. And it went through, I think, 4 page one rewrites. And then each character, whenever once we finally got our Howard version down, we would go back and do passes for each character. And we would try to at least outline the details of the characters when they're not on screen. So you have these, like, the capabilities of actually doing little feature movies with each character because you know what's happening. And that ended up becoming very helpful for the actors when they got involved. Think about it. If you're an actor, you get involved. It's like, not only can we give you a character biography because we needed to do it to know that for ourselves, but we can actually tell you what's going on in your character's life when you're not on screen, which helps, which you do that anyway as a director when you're talking. I'm like, well, this is what happened before this scene. This was happening after, to put them in the mindset. So the years and years of time that went into, and don't even get me started on the basketball player, you know, like how much writing went into that. So much writing went into that.
So was that always going to be a cameo from a famous real-life basketball
player? Well, it was never a cameo. That's the thing. It was never a cameo.
It's a central character.
Exactly. That's the difference, is that we knew this person had to bring their whole personality. No matter who it was, they had to bring their whole personality and be in the beginning of the movie. I remember I was just showing Kevin, like, there was, like, a 30-second ad. And he's in the movie, you know, he's in from the whole ad, you know, because it's such an important part of it, you know, it's like a bedrock, you know.
We started in 2010 as Crazy Nick fans, totally inspired and enervated by Amari Stoudemire's arrival in New York as the Knicks, and then on the Knicks team. And he proclaimed the Knicks are back. He was the first real superstar to show up in New York. So we wrote the movie around his real life persona, or the persona that he projects. And he's Jewish, and we wanted to kind of, and as you can imagine, in the theme of the movie, the Beta Israelites, the Ethiopian Jewish tribe, you know, that would become something that would be an inspiration or motivation for him to have this gemstone. And then we wrote it around this 8-game winning streak that the Knicks went on, this crazy mythic performance that Amari went down. And then as the time went on, we started to keep trying to update it. Then at one point Amari had a game where he got really pissed after he lost, and he punched a fire extinguisher. And he played the next game with an arm cast. So then we wrote that into the movie, that actor tied to when Kevin goes through the showcase with the glass breaking. We were it was Amari. So we're like, oh, no. Now you can make it so that bandage that he's playing with is tied to.
It was actually what we were trying to tailor the games, because we wanted to use real games. Yeah. We could just, that was the perfect game to use for when when he broke the showcase.
So then around 2015, you know, when we started, we went to Sandler in 2010, then we went back to him in 2015-ish, and he again was not available, quote unquote. And then we started going down the road with Sacha Baron Cohen. Around that time, you know, we were with this new agency, and they were suggesting to cast up the player part. And they said, Kobe wants to act. We heard that he's interested in acting. So we're like, oh, okay. I mean, the movie centers around real games. Will a West Coast player make sense? We were like, okay, you know what we'll do is, again, this is a central character of the movie. You have to figure out the motivations. Okay, we found a game that in New York will center around his 60-point performance at the Garden. Okay, great. The movie will become about a man trying to get back to his greatness, a youth elixir. This gem becomes a youth elixir. Howard's trying to get back to when he was the man. And you spend 2 weeks working every day trying to, like, make the movie work for Kobe Bryant. I never really believed that he would be in the Diamond District for some reason. So I don't know why. I just didn't buy it. And then we finally finished it. We sent it to the agency. Like, oh, sorry. He actually doesn't want to act. He wants to direct. We're like, you wasted all that time. So then we went down the road for a while with another player, Joel Embiid, to make the movie contemporary. He's on the 76ers, and he's a player from Cameroon. So the themes of the movie became, you know, you can understand the themes, that it's about reclamation, this thing from Africa, bringing it back, playing empowered because you have this thing. And then it was Joel. We got to know Joel. His manager actually appears in the movie, Jenny Sachs. She plays Kevin's manager. We went to some games. It was amazing. And his humor, Joel's kind of known as he was an internet troll at the time. He was trolling Rihanna, you know, literally from Twitter. It was amazing. And then the production slipped into the basketball season, and we couldn't shoot with an active player anymore. So we went back to the recently retired list. We have to see who still looks the same. And Kevin was on the list. But Garnett, as a Knicks fan, I hated him so much. So my basketball fanaticism, my Knicks fanaticism, eclipsed my film intelligence. So I actually couldn't, like, be smart enough to realize, oh, wait a second, I hate him for a very specific reason, because he's an incredible performer. So then we meet with Kevin. I told him that. I told him I hate your guts when I met him. And he appreciated that. And then Benny asked him if Amari had time on the clock, which is a sign of true Knicks delirium.
He's like, that was 9 years ago in a regular season game, and you guys still care about that. And to us, it changes the tide of the season. It's funny, though, with Kevin, though, because, like, normally in, like, bets in movies, it's usually just the points. You know, oh, my God, they scored so many points. And that's what you go on. But with Kevin, his game is so well-rounded, and it's rebounds, points, opening tip. All these things are important, and they mean so much that it rounds off the bet, and it becomes so much bigger, you know, in an incredible way. And that's also something that then changes too. Is all these little things are so interconnected, you know, that you can't really dissect them.
I mean, and then when you than, you know, you when you actually sit down and find games.
Yeah, so you realize what the people, what's on camera. You know, it's like what they chose to film.
And it was tough because, you know, you can't actually.
2012.
Yeah, those games aren't really. And like when you try to write for a basketball game, a big part of writing as a real basketball viewing
those
fan.
Little details.
Of course, he's betting on all these micro details of this performer's game, but you also there's all these little moments in the broadcast of the game itself that make it entertainment. That they're the little things, the fans that they decide to show.
Those are the close ups to the players that's changing the momentum.
We couldn't get our hands on that broadcast. You know, we couldn't approach the NBA to ask them to send us the broadcast.
So we were literally searching all the time.
And we ended up finding it through a third party in Japan, someone who just like had them all, but we didn't find that until halfway through production. So we're writing those scenes kind of blindly, using highlights from the internet. Not the full broadcast, so you can only write based on what you could see and imagine. But then we finally got our hands on the full broadcast, like, you know, halfway through production, and you rewrite all those scenes based on all the little details, like the guy that Howard points out that says that he looks like the Phil character.
Also, it's like when he sees somebody on the screen, Elton Brand, or there were so many other players that we used, like Holiday.
Drew Holiday's.
Or Iguodala. There are certain lines that you call out, because when they choose to show the close-up of them, it's so visceral.
There's a line that we cut in the thing where Iguodala, Andre Iguodala, who went on to win multiple championships, become an MVP in the championship. There's a line that Howard said to him. It's fun to write when you know it's in the past to know what happened in the future. He goes, Iguodala is never going to be a champion. This guy's the worst player in the world.
Never get a ring.
He'll never get a ring. He can only say that. It was funny because you can only say that knowing that he did win a ring. And Kevin, in particular, when he was doing his post-game interview that we recreated, he got transported back to 2012. He was talking about the future as if it didn't happen.
Is this the end of the big three? It's like, no, yeah. Oh, no, we're going to be together. You know, maybe we'll get another ring. You know, imagining that alternate universe.
So I want to ask you about Daddy Longlegs, because we're going to screen it in January.
Oh, awesome.
The day before Gems comes out, we're doing a screening.
Incredible.
Because it never got a proper release here.
No, it did not.
So we thought it would be nice for people to see.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, now you know it.
Is it going to play at 35? I think there's a print of it, actually.
There's probably multiple prints of that.
Well, it played at Cannes. It was at the Cannes Film Festival.
That would be incredible. At the moment, we're going to play it from a DVD.
No, you can't do that.
We will handle that.
Yeah, we have to figure that out.
Thank you, because, I mean, it's my favorite film that you guys have made. And
wow, really?
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, I adore it. And I spoke to Ronald Bronstein recently for that magazine, actually, and it was really surreal because I was like, oh my god.
The irony is that we went to Sandler with the tiny little modicum of success we had with that movie, trying to use that, and the irony is that we made contact with Good Time, but it's Daddy Longlegs that he responded to, the one of the most.
I think there's a Sandler sensibility.
Oh, Big Daddy.
Oh, for sure.
Big Daddy.
So what are your kind of fondest memories of making that film?
For making Daddy Longlegs?
Yeah.
God. I actually just remembered, there was a moment in the scene in the car when they're driving up. There was all that.
When he says, no music in the car, I'm allergic to music. Yeah.
That
guy's in Uncut Gems.
Did you catch
him? Yes, he plays the guy in the theater.
No Vacation.
When he says, oh, No Vacation. We grew up with that guy. His name is Aaron Topian, and he's a Lebanese guy where our dad was.
And he's also he's the guy in the...
That guy, once we came back to our apartment.
Oh, my God.
And that's broken glass. Next to the we lived on the fourth floor of this apartment building, and there was broken glass.
The door was still locked though, so it was like, how did that happen?
It was broken glass from the terrace, and we're like, what happened? Nothing was missing, and it was before the days of cell phones, so it was just like, what? We didn't know what happened. It was a mystery until Aaron called from Lebanon. Called our dad, be like, you have no idea what happened.
Locked the door. I left.
And I left my passport in the apartment, so I climbed the building.
Yeah, four stories.
Yeah,
climbed up.
And then broke his way into the apartment, got his passport, and left.
It's actually, and in that scene in Daddy Longlegs, he's a big guy as it is, and it's funny. Well, in the tiny Subaru, but in Uncut Gems, when he's in the theater, I remember he had to actually have two seats because he was so big, you know, because his legs were so long. But in Daddy Longlegs, we actually put him on phone books. Remember?
Yeah,
we had to stay on phone books to get him higher.
Yeah, we wanted him to look like BFG almost. But this guy.
In that scene, I remember when we were doing that, of course, like, what are you going to do? We have to direct the actors, so we're just going to be in the trunk of the car. It's this tiny Subaru. Both of us are in that trunk. And then you flash forward to, fast forward to Uncut Gems, and there's the scene where Howard's getting, like, attacked by all those guys. I'm like, oh God,
in the SUV,
we're gonna have to be close to that action. So we were in the trunk of that car. Yeah, both of us.
I know, and this huge production is kind of like, why are you guys in the trunk? We have a follow van with seven monitors.
Yeah, we have to be in the trunk.
My fondest memory from Daddy Long Legs, I was actually just remembering this. So the movie was produced by a friend of ours who we met through the internet, named Casey Neistat. And it's funny, you know, like he and his brother were making work, and now Casey's gone on to become this like huge YouTuber, and he was like the ultimate hustler. You know, he just said with Daddy Long Legs, he's like, give me 48 hours, I'll get you the money for you. He's that type of a guy. And then he at hour 47, he's like, all right, meet me on the corner of Worth and Broadway in your car. Pack for the weekend. I was like, where are we going? He's like, don't ask questions. You're going to get the money. And then I remember we drove out to Long Island. We met Andy Spade and Kate Spade, and we ended up spending time with them. And anyway, Casey, as a producer of the movie, was also, as you can imagine, he's an adrenaline person. So we had this scene in the movie. It's this nightmare scene. First of all, we spent a tenth of the budget recreating the mosquito from the American Natural History Museum.
Yes.
Because it was something that we tortured our minds as kids. And so we made this perfect replica with a guy who did props for movies but also made a lot of money making sex toys that as his mold.
As you do.
I remember going to like check out the mosquito, being like seeing tons of like plastic penises and vaginas, and I was just like, what is that? He's like, that's how I make my money. I was like, oh, okay.
He pulls out a binder of the full like measurements of the mosquito, because he too had obsessed with it as a kid.
And then he's like, he prided himself, it took them 90 days to make that mosquito, and I did three of them in 2 weeks.
No, it took him 90 days. It took them a year. Remember, he did it in 90 days.
I don't remember.
It was much longer.
Anyway, so we're shooting this nightmare scene where we had this. We have three versions of the mosquito: one that can fly, one where the abdomen can take blood, and then another one that he kills.
It's actually our first use of CG.
It was our first use of CG. Do you remember what we did to get the CG? We actually did Hold on. We did. There was a guy named Andrew Zuccaro who knew how to use After Effects. He's like, oh, I can get rid of the poles and the strings and everything.
But After Effects our style, because we knew we didn't do any special effects work. So we just had the footage.
So we just had handheld 16mm footage. But I remember we had to do – he's like, all right, I'll do it for free for you guys if you guys
– edit. Edit and do the sound design to that commercial.
He did some commercial for some like,
but we
some
had to, I remember it.
Arts pharmaceutical drug or something, and actually we ended up getting paid for that too, which was
because
amazing.
We did
a lot more work.
Yes,
I think we did like production design. We did a lot of stuff. He's like, if you help me do this, I'll help you do that. It was the days of bartering. And anyway, so I remember we were shooting this scene, and in the scene, a guy. It's kind of like a moment within a moment within a moment. So you think you're watching a dream, and then the character wakes up, and then he's in another dream, whatever. It's an expressive moment. But in the scene, Ronnie's character is watching this. This mosquito is sucking the blood from both of his kids, and then actually biting him. But then he's awoken by a robber kicking in the glass of his apartment building, and then he wakes up and he sees this person kind of run out of the window and scale up the building, and he sticks his head out the window. We actually shot that on 35th Street between 5th Avenue and Madison. And Casey Neistat, I remember going up to the roof. We had access to the roof. The person on this building had no idea.
We didn't have access
and
to the roof.
We didn't have
found access yes. to the roof.
And our camera and our DP, Brett Jukowicz, was Yudkovich. We had all this belay gear, this mountain climbing gear. So we anchored the camera person so he can hang over the thing. And Casey rappelled down the building and actually was just a guy. If you looked up, all you saw was a guy in all black on the side of the building, illuminated by a massive neon sign for the hotel next door, the Metro Hotel. We had no other lighting. We just used that because it was so bright. And he's hanging three stories above 35th Street, kicking in this window, and then having to climb up to the roof. And I remember shooting that and think, and like when you look back on it, you're like, we didn't know anything about, you know, safety. Like, I mean, we were all like, Casey, like, you know, would do things. He would test it. We had all the right climbing gear. And his brother is actually now a big stunt coordinator. shows up in The Irishman, actually, as a stunt guy. And he actually was a stunt coordinator on Good Time. And Dean Nice that. So, like, there obviously was, like, a history of knowing how to do that stuff, but it's crazy to think back on that.
Well, yeah. And also, Brett was literally belated.
You're not going to bend into a podcast. No, you can't show
I was looking for you,
picture.
But I was trying to find it because literally Brett was hanging off the building.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Looking down.
So that was a fond memory.
You're about to be dragged away from us, but one very final question.
I'm sorry. We talked all about that.
No, this has been incredible stuff. It's December when we're recording this. Of course, it's the time where we look back on the year, think about our highlights, and I wonder, well, in our personal Little White Lies list, Uncut Gems is going to rank very highly, no spoilers.
But, thank you, that's crazy. Thank
are
you.
There any highlights from 2019, films you've seen that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Oh, sure. I love
Parasite
was is a you know, visionary movie. Irishman's great. The relationship between Cliff Booth and Rick Dalton is in Once Upon a Time is amazing. I haven't seen everything. I still have. I liked Rob a lot, Pattinson a lot, in High Life, and I thought The Lighthouse was amazing. Midsommar had, you know, that opening of Midsommar is really, and that first tripping scene, the Maradona
documentary is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
the beginning to that, I was just like, holy shit! The the way it starts in the car, it's like that music, it's incredible.
You know, we were so steeped in production and post of this movie, so we haven't had an opportunity to see everything I wanted to see this year. There's a lot of stuff that, like, I haven't seen Matty Diop's film yet, Atlantics. Oh, yeah. I know I'm gonna. I like her shorts, so. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I haven't seen yet that I'm sure is gonna rank highly for me. But yeah.
But that sounds like a dozen great movies.
It's been nice for me doing interviews with other filmmakers, and the first thing they'll say to me, they see the pop socket, and they go, oh my god, Uncut Gems, massive. Like, Ryan Johnson, like, I walked into the interview for Knives Out, and he was like, amazing, the best film.
Did he really? I saw Knives Out. That was cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I'm excited for that though.
That was it was good. It just like when you think you're ahead of the writing, it surprises
it looks like
you.
So much fun.
Well, Lakeith did shot that movie right after shooting Gems.
He's had a great year.
And he texted me. I was like, "How's it going on Knives Out?" He's like, "It's funny. I find myself slipping into the Damani character." He had no time really in between the projects, and the Damani character was like, you know, a lot. So that was funny.
He's so straight laced in Knives Out.
Yeah, he is so straight-laced. I know.
Well,
he's
a true chameleon. You know, he's incredible to watch.
Yeah, he is such a serious performer. I love it. I can't wait to work with him again.
Oh, I hope you guys do.
Yeah, for sure we will.
Benny Josh, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
And I'm actually holding up a picture to the microphone so you guys can see it.
Can I have another copy of the?
I've only got three.
Oh, you have three. Okay.
Absolutely.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, Hannah, I'm still reeling from that chat with the Safdie brothers. We could have spoke about so much more, but I'm glad that we got what we did.
I would just quite like to talk to them forever, about everything. I mean, I don't want to gush too much on this podcast, but I think they really are two of the most kind of open filmmakers. Some filmmakers don't like talking about their process and their craft, and they're the complete opposite. They love talking about what goes into the film, and that for me is fascinating. When you love a film, all you kind of want to do is talk to people about it, so going straight to the source like this was a real treat.
And for people to be so sincere, energetic and earnest, and
they're so happy that you love the movie.
Yeah.
And the same with Daddy Ongo, because I say in the podcast it's my favorite of their films, probably on a tie with Uncut Gems now, I will say. It was really nice to talk to them about Daddy Long Legs as well, and I really hope people come along and see if we manage to secure that 35mm print on the 9th of January at the Prince Charles. It'll be a nice evening, and we'll be there doing another podcast about the Safdie Brothers.
Talking more about the Safdie Brothers. Exactly, yes. And of course, we do mention the end of year best films of 2019 list. You can check that out at lwlies.com.
uncutgems@gmail.com and let us know what you think about Uncut Gems, about the Safdie brothers, about our films of the year, the usual channels. That's at Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or the comments section at lwlies.com/podcast. Hannah, it's been a real journey today.
It has.
Thank you for joining me. I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.